This is Elizabeth Stark Powers in the book writing world, and I'm excited to share with you a focused example of the techniques we use in craft class to write our most powerful scenes. In class, we will often focus on one aspect of craft, such as uses of setting, creating tension, writing terrific dialogue. Today, I'm going to walk you through a whole scene, step by step. The idea is for you to use the techniques I show and explain, but with your own content. Just as art students will go to sit in art museums and copy the masters, we writers can adapt the brilliant approaches our favorite authors have used in order to create moving, effective, professional-level prose. The difference is that in the craft class, you always write your own content, your own characters, action, story. So to return to the art student metaphor, it's as if the art student were to say, I'll take that crosshatch technique that creates a shadow at the church wall, and I'll use it to create a shadow for my tree. So you lift what works for you and you import it into your own writing. The one rule of craft class is to write. So if what I'm explaining doesn't inspire you and something else sparks you in the example that I read, you're always welcome to take that. You're always welcome to push back as long as you're pushing in the direction of your writing. Whatever you write today, just trust it and go with it. You won't even know what you have in the process of writing. You'll know it later when you go back and read it, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And this is a scene from Lives of Girls and Women. I have this terrible copy of it. This 1970s sort of. She's not very available right now. I mean, I think that the Nobel kind of made her in demand, and my book group is reading her. So I signed up with this copy with this kind of like hilarious cover, signet, you know, romance or whatever. But anyway, to Alice Munro, and the story within the novel is called Heirs of the Living Body. And and just I'm going to read through the list first in the handout, just so that we can kind of pull that those things up. And then I'll read the scene, and then, like I said, we'll go through it. Okay. All right. So the first thing is it starts with place. And the significant place incites curiosity. And so in your example, it might be forbidden, it might be mysterious, it might be new, it might be frightening, I mean, it might be thrilling, whatever it is, it's in this scene, it's place that kind of grabs us. And then the first turn comes from an unexpected character, a question or a threat. And we'll note that I noted that the protagonist stays focused on place, on her initial intent. So that there's like this kind of cross current coming in. And then a turn in the background raises the stakes. So these outside forces raises the stakes. The fourth one is the another action from the unexpected character. I noted that the focus is random, the aggression is subtextual, but it still ramps the tension up. And then there's another turn, and this one is the direct threat. This is the direct threat / invitation. So the first one's a little more random, you know, everything's happening subtextually, and there's a focus that's more, you know, that's other than the direct threat invitation. And then in the next one, number five, it's the direct threat. And then finally, the protagonist is pushed to action, and we get the response. So that's all abstract. Now let's hear the scene, which is... This is what pulls us in. I went through the door at the end of the side hall into the old part of the house. This part was called the storeroom. From outside, it looked like a little house of logs tacked onto the side of the big brick house. The windows were small and square and set slightly askew, like the never quite convincing windows in a doll's house. Hardly any light got in because of the dim, towering junk piled up everywhere, even in front of the windows. The churn and the old washing machine that was turned by hand, wooden bedsteads taken apart, trunks, tubs, skies, a baby carriage clumsy as a galleon, kneeling drunkenly to one side. This was the room Auntie Grace refused to go into. Aunt Elspeth always had to go if they wanted something out of it. She would stand in the doorway and sniff boldly and say, "What a place! The air in here is just like a tomb." I loved the sound of that word when I first heard her say it. I did not know exactly what it was or had got it mixed up with womb. And I saw us inside some sort of hollow marble egg filled with blue light that did not need to get in from outside. Mary Agnes was sitting on the churn, looking surprised. "What are you coming in here for?" she said softly. "You're going to get yourself lost." I didn't answer her. Not turning my back, I wandered round the room. I had often wondered, thinking back, if there was anything in that baby carriage. Sure enough, there was, a pile of old Family Herald. I heard my mother's voice calling my name. She sounded slightly anxious, unwillingly deferential. I didn't make a sound, and Mary Agnes didn't either. What had she been doing in here? She had found a pair of old-fashioned ladies' boots, laced up the front and trimmed with fur, and she was hanging on to them. She rubbed the fur under her chin, rabbit fur. Now she came and stuck the boots in my face. Rabbit fur? I don't want them. Come and see Uncle Craig. Oh, this is Uncle Craig's funeral, so I should mention that Uncle Craig is a dead body here. And so this is Mary Agnes says, come and see Uncle Craig. And the protagonist has been doing everything she could to avoid seeing the body. No, you haven't seen him yet. No. She waited with a boot in each hand, blocking my way, then said again in such a sly, inviting voice, come see Uncle Craig. I will not. She dropped the boots and put her hand on my arm, dug the fingers in. I tried to shake her off, and she got me with the other hand and pulled me towards the door. For someone so clumsy, someone who had nearly died 3 times from bronchitis, she had shocking strength. She worked her hand down to my wrist, and with a clutch like a bear's, she got hold of my hand. Her voice was still at leisure, mild and gloating. You come and see Uncle Craig. I dropped my head and got her arm in my opened mouth. I got her solid, downy arm just below the elbow, and I bit and bit and broke the skin, and in pure freedom, thinking I'd done the worst thing that I would ever do, I tasted Mary Agnes Oliphant's blood. Isn't that great? So that's the scene. So again, just to review, so it starts with the place, meaning that strange room, right? And we get this whole kind of description of this strange room that she, you know, and she makes her sense of a womb, right? So the whole setup is about place and you know, and yet it's a place with a lot of you know, intrigue. And then we have Mary Agnes there. And Mary Agnes is her slightly like disabled cousin, like some sort of slight history of, you know, I don't know, brain damage or something, very, you know, but anyway, she's a little bit strained and older than the narrator, but kind of paired with her a lot. So anyway, so she's in there and we get her kind of initial question/threat, you know, what are you coming in here for? You're going to get yourself lost, right? So that's the first turn. We're all about the room and Mary Agnes is there. The narrator doesn't answer, and she's still investigating the room. She's answering her question about the baby carriage, you know. And then we have the mother, the background turn, which is the mother's voice, right, calling. So this is the whole funeral, and we now hear the mother's voice, and neither of them answer, which kind of also pairs them in an interesting way. They're at odds with each other.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, I'm muting the brief. They're at odds with each other, and then they also are sort of there, but they're in cahoots here by not answering the mother. And then Mary Agnes has these boots, right? And she's like trying to rub the rabbit fur in her face, and so there's this kind of so there's aggression, but it's not yet about the funeral or about Uncle Craig. It's about the rabbit fur, and so we're still kind of connected to the place and the strange things in it, but there's tension in this, you know, in the conflict between them. And then it ramps up to be about seeing the dead body. And so now we've like narrowed in on something truly threatening to the protagonist who's been just trying to avoid this dead body. And so that, you know, we see that kind of ramp up. She refuses, Mary Agnes insists. They move from the verbal to the physical, and here you can just move, you know, again, I said, or from any approach to any other. We have characters trying something, if that doesn't work, trying something else. Mary Agnes is trying to kind of intimidate her, and the rabbit fur doesn't work, and so she moves on to Uncle Craig. Del, the protagonist, is responding. she, you know, she tries verbally refusing, and that doesn't work, so she moves on to biting, right? So different strategies that the characters are trying. Until finally, you know, the one that works, she bites her and triumphs. Okay. So that's a scene. And just like when we do our exercises in class, it'll work the same way, except you're going to write one scene. What I want to say is that I don't know if we'll have time to hear everybody's whole scene, but that's my hope. So you cannot import anything you've written before. Like, you can't be like, oh, I'm taking an extra paragraph, or, oh, I kind of rewrote something. Like, it has to be what you write right now, because we will not have time to read a mixture of what you wrote before and what you write right now. So you can make notes yourself, or you can, you know, say, I want this paragraph here, but you can't read it out loud. Okay, so this is kind of a little athletic exercise. We do everything that happens right now. Okay, I would love it if you haven't turned your camera on, that you do so, because I do sort of peer at your faces. I guess it's just three if you can, just to see how everyone's hanging in there. All right, and again, goal posted in the chat, I will respond to while you are writing. So I read the scene, and now I am going to just read the opening. And if you missed the whole scene, well, you can just go step by step here. And again, as always, you don't have to do the thing I point out. You may be inspired in a different direction by the writing, by the scene you're working on, by the moment. That's fine. What I do recommend is that you try to have conflict and build, which are, you know, some of the things we're looking at here, these kind of unexpected turns and revelations and amping up of stakes and those kinds of things. So. Okay, so we're going to start with place, which is one of our early classes as well. And the place is significant. Here it's significant because it incites curiosity. It's somewhat forbidden. It's somewhat scary. I put some other qualities, like a place could be brand new, and for that reason, incite curiosity. You know, it could be forbidden anyway. So there's a number of reasons that your place that you're going to focus in on might be engaging, but it's significant. It matters. And it's got, you know, intrigue, and so we're going to go into the details of the place. That's the first thing we're going to do. And she does it by description and also by kind of association, right? Kind of free association with the word, what it makes her think of. So I'm going to read you those first two paragraphs and jump in. I went through the door at the end of the side hall into the old part of the house. This part was called the storeroom. From outside, it looked like a little house of logs tacked onto the side of the big brick house. The windows were small and square and set slightly askew, like the never quite convincing windows in a doll's house. Hardly any light got in because of the dim, towering junk piled up everywhere, even in front of the windows. The churn and the old washing machine that was turned by hand, bedsteads taken apart, trunks, tubs, skies, a baby carriage clumsy as a galleon. Keeling drunkenly to one side. I read that wrong last time. Keeling drunkenly to one side. This was the room Auntie Grace refused to go into, and Elspeth always had to go if they wanted something out of it. She would stand in the doorway and sniff boldly and say, "What a place. The air in here is just like a tomb." I loved the sound of that word when I first heard her say it. I did not know exactly what it was, or had thought it mixed up with womb, and I saw it inside some sort of hollow marble egg filled with light that did not need to get in from outside. All right, so that's kind of a long setup, but it's about place. I mean, even as you notice, though, there's a little memory of a scene, right? But all you need to do, we're going to just do a short kind of warm-up one here, is just get us established in place with detail and, if you like, also with association, okay? for other ones, but I just, I do want to jump into the first turn. So this is where the unexpected character arrives, and it's just this. Mary Agnes was sitting on the churn. And I love how she references, you know, we see her, so we've seen it, we've got the place really vividly, we've already seen the churn, and now we see Mary Agnes on the churn. Mary Agnes was sitting on the churn, not looking surprised, which I also love because she's sort of a surprise, but she herself is not surprised. "What are you coming in here for?" she said softly. "You're going to get yourself lost." I didn't answer her. Not turning my back, I wandered around the room. I had often wondered, thinking back, if there was anything in that baby carriage. Sure enough, there was a pile of old family heralds. So the tension already comes up because there's a character in the kind of question slash threat, and she's still focused on the play and her own agenda. And so there's, you know, and the not answering is a great technique you might want to play with here. You know, a question goes unanswered, there's tension there. But also to think about the trajectory your character is on, she or he may not get knocked off of it that quickly. So even although there's a threat or an interference. Okay, so see, introduce an unexpected character, or whatever the first turn is going to look like for you. Think about a question or a threat. Think about your protagonist maybe not yet engaging, and any of those things that make sense to you. Okay. in it, and I'm probably going to just pop in rather than telling you, giving you warning. Number three, which is there's a background, something that happens from the outside that again raises the stakes, and it is this. I heard my mother's voice calling my name. She sounded slightly anxious, unwillingly deferential. I didn't make a sound, and Mary Agnes didn't either. So I think this is a great moment where, you know, one, that the outside tension kind of just redefines these two opponents as also allies, right? Or allies in that they're preserving this kind of space in which they're having their battle. So thinking about, again, just thinking about the power dynamics, what might shift the power dynamics, what might force them to be allies while they continue being in conflict. So those are some of the things you might be sparked by, you might play with. Thinking about just what can come in from the outside. We've got internal stuff, we've got this other character, and now what can come in from the outside that can also turn the screws, that can also raise the pressure on your characters. And in this case, it's the slightly anxious, unwillingly deferential mother's voice, and then the response, right? So thinking about action and the response of both of them not answering, right? So thinking about your character's response and how it aligns with or conflicts with the other character. Okay. Right, we have the next action from that unexpected character, the opponent, say. And again, here the focus is random. We're not yet kind of narrowing in on the actual conflict, but there is aggression, but it's subtextual, and still the tension is ramping up. So in this case, it's these rabbit boots, right? It starts here. What had she been doing in here? She had found a pair of old-fashioned ladies' boots, laced up the front and trimmed with fur, and she was hanging onto them. She rubbed the fur under her chin. Rabbit fur. That's a line of dialogue, she says it. The opponent says, Mary Agnes says, rabbit fur. Now she came and stuck the boots in my face. Rabbit fur? That's Mary Agnes again. And then Del says, I don't want them. Okay, so we have this initial aggression, but it's, you know, all she says is rabbit fur. And so it's great to think of some business, some bit of, in this, and this is where you might go back to place, to where you started with. What is this place? What are the opportunities of this place? How are the characters going to maybe make an initial kind of attack, but you know, putting that aggression into the subtext and really, and instead kind of talking about something in the place or some prop or object, right? So then thinking about the action too, she rubbed the fur under her chin. So, I mean, it's not all happening in dialogue. It's also happening in action, and it's things that are significant as well as people. So go ahead and move into number four. And we're doing about 7 minutes. things are ramping up. Now the character is going to dive right in with the direct threat / invitation. And we'll see the dynamics of refusal, insistence, and we'll see it move from verbal to physical violence. But one of the things you want to think about is just the different approaches that a character takes. When one approach isn't working, we're very resourceful, right? So then we try something else. And that's what she does here. So this is the fight. Come and see Uncle Craig. And I mentioned this, a couple of people came in late, that Uncle Craig is dead. So this is his funeral, and it's his dead body that she's being urged to see. Come and see Uncle Craig. No. You haven't seen him yet. No. She waited with a boot in each hand, blocking my way. Then said again in such a sly, inviting voice, come to see Uncle Craig. I will not. She dropped the boots and put her hand on my arm, dug the fingers in. I tried to shake her off, and she got me with the other hand and pulled me towards the door. For someone so clumsy, someone who had nearly died 3 times from bronchitis, she had shocking strength. She worked her hand down to my wrist, and with a clutch like a bear's, she got hold of my hand. Her voice was still at leisure, mild and gloating. You come and see Uncle Craig. So the threat ramps up, and there's all of this action, and they, you know, there's the boots, right? The boots are still there. Now one is in each hand. She's blocking the way, and then we have the voice, and then we have the action. She dropped the boots, hand on arm, the fingers dug in, right? So all the physical details that that keep this ramping up, and then there's even a little bit of backstory. Someone who had nearly died 3 times from bronchitis, right? But she has shocking strength. So what's unexpected, more that's unexpected about her. And so now we move from come and see Uncle Craig, from this fly inviting voice to this, you know, you come and see Uncle Craig. And see in that last one is actually italicized with dashes around it. So so let's go ahead and take it right there, right to the heart of things. What's the threatening, you know, sort of worst thing that can happen on the scale of the scene that you're doing with these characters? All right, so have fun with it. finale here. And this is, you know, we had the sort of kind of worst thing that could happen in the context of this scene. And now we have the protagonist's response, and she's pushed to action. So you have to push her hard enough that she'll do something different. And in this case, you know, she's tried being very verbally clear and refusing, and now she's driven to this. I dropped my head and got her arm in my opened mouth. I got her solid, downy arm just below the elbow, and I bit and bit and broke the skin. And in pure freedom, thinking I had done the worst thing that I would ever do, I tasted Mary Agnes Oliphant's blood. We get her whole name there. You know, there's something about Mary Agnes Oliphant's blood. So, and again, you know, it's just in the context of what this means to this character, this action, you know, and what she will do to protect herself from this threat that has amped up and amped up and amped up. So what is your protagonist's final response here that will do the job, that will get her free, that will, you know, shift the terms of the debate, whatever needs to happen here, what can she do? And if, you know, think about how resourceful we are when we're really up against it. Sometimes I think we have this like desk syndrome as writers, where we're at our desks, and so it's hard to imagine taking action, but you can think about the times when you felt threatened or pushed up against the wall. I mean, how very resourceful we are. Maybe not, you know, maybe not the best use of our skills or whatever, but we're gonna come out at fighting. So here you can wrap it up for your character. took a little less than an hour to write an entire scene. So if it feels a little rough or a little rushed, it probably is. But it's a draft, and hopefully it has a feeling of movement, of build, of the possibility. You're starting to unearth some of the tensions, maybe exploring some of the plates and the objects, the character, some background, possible background things that raise tension. So these are just some of the possibilities.
Congratulations! You've worked through the twists, turns, and build of an entire scene. I hope you enjoyed this class. The twists, keep in touch turns, at bookwritingworld.com, where you'll find more writing techniques, inspiration, keep in touch at bookwritingworld.com, where you'll find more writing techniques, inspiration, and community. I look forward to hearing from you.